Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you once again, here to talk about your now unranked Marquette Golden Eagles, Phil.
Yeah, it was a quick stay, and to boot, a certain team to the west is now ranked. May it hold all the same blessings it gave us.
Well, and the worst part about it, there's not a single team in the Big East ranked.
So nor
I
should
think
there
that's
be.
An issue I want to talk about a little bit later in the show as we look at maybe the conference early on here. But let's just kind of jump right into it, and I think we'd be kind if we called the past week for Marquette basketball anything but disappointing.
Yeah, I think it was a complete disappointment. It's not an unrecoverable disappointment, but it was, considering where we hoped the team was, and you know, with the aside of the last 13 minutes of the game on Saturday, it was pretty bad basketball for Marquette, just all around, offense, defense, just bad.
Yeah, let's touch on Indiana a little bit. And one thing that I said on Twitter, and I could handle losing, but to go to Assembly Hall and be non-competitive. I mean, Marquette was never at any point in that game. And for them to just get their doors blown off, and really, it was never interesting. I think maybe at one point they were within seven and going to the free throw line to maybe get within five. They missed two, and then it was just really never close after that. That was the most alarming thing for me, Phil, is that to go on a big stage and just to get absolutely manhandled, which actually kind of has been a theme for what John Casper pointed out, a colleague of mine, classmate at Marquette. He's a newspaper writer now. He pointed out, like, Wojo is 0-7 against Big Ten teams not named Wisconsin, and most of those games have been total blowouts.
Yeah, well, and this is where I was of two minds. I mean, I was two minds on this. It is routine that it's seemingly, especially against high-level competition, Marquette just is not competitive, right? Which is one of the most frustrating things there is, right? I could take a last-second loss or something like that way more than this whole, like, well, you know, you got to leave early because the game was over by halfway through the first half. I don't know that it was quite that extreme with Indiana, but, you know, it wasn't good. But here's where I'm of two minds, whether I retreat into pessimistic Phil, which seems to show up more and more in the Wojo era, or if I grab onto the last sliver of hope that is, this is recoverable, right? I mean, Marquette prior to Wojo, you know, Buzz had the Vanderbilt and the Florida games, right? There was always at least one non-conference game early in the season where Marquette got absolutely boat raced or embarrassed. I mean, they lost to Vanderbilt on the Bradley Center court floor by 30 points the same year they went to the Elite Eight. So it's not representative, or it doesn't say by itself, it doesn't say that this is not going to work, but given the kind of the Wojo era and it's a recurring theme, I'm less optimistic that this is one of those outliers.
Yeah, like, I'm not ready to punt on the season based on it, but I would just like to see something better than that over the course of the next few weeks. You know, if we're going to break into, like, what actually caused that to get so ugly, you know, obviously the defense was not exactly the top 30 defense that we, you know, the stats showed over the first two games against much inferior competition. Romeo Langford tore up Marquette, as I was kind of afraid he might. I didn't think it would get that bad. But one thing that also kind of jumps out to me, Phil, is that I'm not sure the Marcus Howard as the point guard plan is working out quite as Wojo had hoped.
No,
he turns the ball over a lot.
Yeah, I don't think it's working at all. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I also don't think it's what Wojo necessarily wants. And I don't want to jump ahead to the Presbyterian game, But I think Wojo's been basically waiting for Chartouni to give him something of value. But yeah, Marcus Howard, if he's going to be the initiator of the offense, teams with length and talent are going to pressure him, and it's not going to go well. Like Kansas, if Marcus Howard is doing the bulk of the ball handling, if you will, in the Kansas game, that's going to be a bloodbath in the first half because Kansas will absolutely turn him over.
Yeah, they absolutely will. And, you know, sometimes, I do wonder if, like you mentioned, Phil, if Wojo is just pressuring, or not pressuring, but like you said, waiting for Chartouni to show him that I'm ready to take over the point guard role so he can move Marcus back to the shooting guard spot, or if the plan is, like, he wants Marcus as the point guard, and the plan is to keep him as the point guard and have more length around him. You know, because part of me wonders, you know, obviously at some point, maybe not this year, maybe next year, but Marcus Howard wants to be in the NBA, as you can understand, because he certainly has some talent and skill that you think could get him there. But if he's going to get in the NBA, he's going to need to be a point guard. And to that end, he needs to show that in college. So, like, that's kind of like a mission, a smaller mission behind the bigger mission of this team winning games is, you know, I'm sure Marcus wants to play point guard and Wojo wants to help Marcus because he's one of his guys. And so, hey, look, I know you want to get to the NBA. We're going to get you there. And so that's also important for the next guy, the next point guard that wants to come to Marquette. So he can say, hey, look, I got Marcus Howard to the NBA. I can get you to the NBA. So I just kind of wonder if there is a plan that, look, we're going to get Marcus Howard point guard minutes because it's, you know, it's good for him, and we can be a good team if he figures it out and becomes an elite point guard. But my concern is if he's ever going to get there, because obviously the bigger goal and the more important goal is to win games as a team. And I think history has shown Marcus is a little bit better off the ball offensively.
Yeah, it's an interesting statistical debate, right? Because, like, in the Indiana game, Howard only had 4 turnovers. Now, 3 of those came, you know, in the first minute and a half, and then 1 was at a critical juncture right before the end of the first half where Marquette was trying to claw back into the game. But then he turned around and had 7 in the Presbyterian game. I would make the argument more so than the pure turnovers, the struggle Marcus has had, and I think this is a carryover from last season and why he needs to not be the originator of the offense, is actually his shot selection. He has taken some hero shots just this side of Caton Reinhart over the last couple of games, and you want him shooting, but like when the ball stops with him, and he just jacks up a shot, it's not great. It's not ideal, especially when other guys, you know, Joey and Sam, the Housers, were doing some work against Indiana, and it just seemingly Marcus just is somewhat of a ball stopper, right? I mean, he looks to his offense first.
A big difference from the past couple years with Marcus, because I feel like we've talked about on this podcast before, the past couple years, especially last year, that Marcus really didn't take many bad shots, and that's why his shooting percentage was so high, and he was like, it was close to 50% his freshman year, and I think he was number 1 in the nation, and I think, but yeah, I think you're right. I did not watch the Presbyterian game. It wasn't on where I live, and based on reactions on Twitter, I wasn't missing much, so I wasn't going to go to a sports bar on a Saturday when people are watching college football and try to ask the bartender to turn on Marquette Presbyterian. So I just kind of followed the game on Twitter. But what people were saying about the game was Marcus's shot selection wasn't good. Either he was forcing it or he was just being passive and trying to be a point guard and try to pass more. And that was also an issue in the first half. I don't know how much of the game, Presbyterian game, you saw, Phil, but what did you see from Marcus in that game?
Yeah, I think he was passive. I watched the whole game. But again, I think Marcus hasn't figured out how to pick his points, right? Like, he hasn't figured out that, you know, he just has to determine who the hot hand, he might be the hot hand or somebody else might be the hot hand. And how do you get the ball to the hot hand, you know, in the offense? And I think, you know, I think he struggled some in the Presbyterian game, but I think Marquette generally struggled in that Presbyterian game. simply because they just looked like they nobody wanted to take command of the situation, right? Everybody was kind of looking for somebody else to take charge. And the defense, you know, one thing I would do want to come back to the defense, I know some of the traditionalists are going to tell me I'm crazy. I don't think the defense is near as bad as it's been in the last couple of years. I think the defense is actually improved, but where the struggle is actually on the offensive side, because the offense, like in shot selection, either it's a poorly chosen three or it's a bad turnover. The offense for Marquette is causing their defense to struggle because the defense is, I'll say, adequate in the half court. Where they're not adequate is when they have to face a fast break or something like that. When they're not a set defense, they're just not good right now.
Yeah, I think there may be something to that because their turnover percentage is alarming right now. You know, on KenPom, it's ranked 278 in the country. 353 teams, so they're way down there in how often they turn the ball over. It's still early, and I'm sure not 100% sure I buy these stats on Marquette's offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency, but they are what they are. According to KenPom, Marquette's a 19th ranked offense at the time we're recording this, and 53rd defensively. Now, before, if that's the numbers at the end of the season, I'd take those. But, you know, I think there's numbers are inflated by some bad competition right now in UMBC and Bethune-Cookman and Presbyterian. But as we said in the last podcast, Phil, when we were optimistic, that even last year when they were, you know, maybe when they did beat up on some bad teams, the defensive numbers were still bad. So the fact that I think there is something to what you're saying is that maybe the defense is not a total disaster like it was the past couple years, and maybe there is some room to build there. My question is as this team goes forward, do we need Chartouni to come in and play more point guard and move Marcus off the ball, and how does that affect the defense if Marcus if Marcus is guarding maybe the other team's shooting guard, and you know, Chartouni came in with a pretty good reputation defensively, is that a move that you think we'll see, or maybe would you like to see, or should we see it?
I think given the way the last 13 minutes of the Presbyterian game went, I don't know what clicked, but Chartouni scored 16 out of his 19 points in the last 13 minutes of the Presbyterian game, and literally in the span of about 7 minutes of game time, Marquette went from trailing 6 to leading by 10. And it was the two Housers, Marcus, Chartouni, and Theo John played that entire time. And Chartouni actually, I thought for sure he was going to miss. I remember one play very vividly. He was just to the right of the top of the arc. His man, it was Derek Wilson-esque, except for it actually worked out. But his man just bailed off of him into the paint, either because he was afraid of Chartouni driving or to double down on Theo John. Either way, Chartouni kind of double clutched and then put up a three. And it went in, and like, it was kind of one of these like, oh, I guess I can take those. And sure enough, he had another one a minute later, and it's off to the races. So the optimistic Phil says, you know, the last 13 minutes of the Presbyterian game kind of unlocked it for Chartouni. So I think the short answer to your question is, I think absolutely we need to be, Chartouni needs to be playing at least 25 minutes a game, 20 to 25 minutes with Marcus. I know you're going to have to play one with the out the other, but I think we got to find ways to maximize Chartouni and Marcus together, because I think that's where we're going to have the best combination of offense and defense from a guard position.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll free up Marcus to do what he does, that when he's not having to think about creating offense for others, maybe he could be more focused on creating for himself, and his shot selection will improve, and I think his shooting percentage will go up because, you know, while Marquette's three-point percentage isn't bad, it's not what Marquette needs, because I think Marquette, especially the last 2 years, was heavily dependent on not just good three-point shooting, but elite three-point shooting to win games. Like Marquette needed guys shooting, you know, around 40% sometimes from three, if not better, for them to win games. You know, right now as a team, Marquette is shooting 33.6, which is kind of middle of the pack in college basketball. It's okay if, you know, your strengths are on, if you have more other strengths. But if you're dependent on that three-point shot, those numbers are going to have to go up, and I think they will. I mean, Marcus Howard's percentage isn't bad. He's at 37. But, you know, the fact that we've seen him dang near 50 makes you, like, kind of look down on that number. I would say the same for Sam Hauser at 34.5%, Joey Hauser 33. Those are numbers I think that can and will go up. And I think that's kind of what they need to happen if they're going to be competitive at all against Kansas.
Yeah, well, and I think for the most part, especially Sam, I think Sam's percentage of from three is misleading simply because it you know, considering he was, you know, up near 45% in years past, you say, well, maybe he's taking bad shots. He's really not. I mean, he's taking good shots. He's just not hitting shots he normally would. I mean, Sam, more so than any other player on the team, seems to be getting wide open looks and just isn't converting at a clip you would anticipate so far. So, you know, at some point, I think some of this regresses to the mean. But, yeah, it's going to take everybody playing their best game, which we haven't seen anywhere. We haven't seen anyone play what I think is their best game this season, let alone all the players, or four out of five of them or whatever, playing their best game. I mean, Theo John's been great and a revelation down low for this team, but I'm not even sure that he's maxed out his ceiling amongst what else is going on. So,
important. That's why, you know, like, I definitely don't want to punt on this team right now. Yeah, last week was rough, and if not for a breakout game from Chartouni, I don't know what we'd be talking about on this podcast if Marquette lost to Presbyterian.
How the local Lowe's had run out of pitchforks and torches?
Yeah, we'd be maybe talking about the future of the program on this show. But, you know, you got to win, you move on, and now you're facing a game against Kansas. So I'm just going to get my prediction out here first, and then I'm going to try to be positive about it. This one's going to hurt. I think it's going to be really bad on Wednesday. The KenPom has the spread at 9 right now. I mean, I would take Kansas -9 all day in this matchup. I think, you know, as much as we're trying to be positive and say Marquette can, you know, build on some things they have, you know, what I saw defensively against Indiana, Kansas is so superior to Indiana, and I think they're just better than Marquette at every position. And I think, shy of an incredible shooting performance, I think this Kansas game is going to be a disaster. I just hope they can get up off the mat and beat, I'm assuming Louisville in the game after that. But let's try to be positive a little bit, Phil. And what do you think would have to happen for Marquette to stun us all and beat Kansas? Maybe just be competitive with Kansas on Wednesday night.
I'm going to say shoot better than 45% as a team from three and commit less than 10 team turnovers, which against the number three KenPom defense seems unlikely.
Very, very unlikely. But I'm definitely with you on the three-point shooting thing, because that's the great equalizer, right? If you're outmanned, you know, we see it in the tournament all the time with maybe these teams that are just don't have anywhere near the talent of the high seed they're playing, but they just go bananas from three, and then you could really make up a lot that way. Yeah, I think if Marquette is making like a crazy number, like somewhere in the realm of like 23 pointers, yeah, then we may have something going. Like if you get one of the games when Marcus Howard just goes crazy and gets around 10, and then the Hauser brothers combine for 6 or 7 themselves, and then maybe you get a few others, yeah, maybe you can get in that crazy range of something like 23 pointers, then I think you're going to have a game. But I think if you're going to go shot for shot, bucket for bucket with Kansas, I think it's going to go really poorly for you. Because, I mean, Kansas is as great as Duke is, and Duke is great. You know, Kansas is a team that you have to look at as a contender for the national title just because they have so much depth. Like I said, I think they're probably better at every position than Marquette. The Lawson kid is Dedrick specifically, they have two of them, but Dedrick Lawson has been exactly what they thought he would be, the transfer from Memphis. He's going to be a tough matchup for whoever's guarding him. You know, they get scarier and scarier as you get from the backcourt to the frontcourt for me, Phil. Because the one thing I will say is, you know, Kansas's backcourt is a little young because you got Dotson, the freshman, Quentin Grimes, who we're all familiar with because Marquette was recruiting him last year. You know, those are some young guys, and maybe you can force them to make some mistakes. The crazy thing for me, Phil, looking at Kansas these first few games, is LeGerald Vick has been shooting out of his mind. This is a guy who left Kansas to test his, put his name in the draft, and Bill Self was like, all right, well, so we'll see you later. You know, you're probably not coming back, and I don't think we want you back. I think we're good without you. And then he pulled his name out of the draft and kind of talked his way back on the Kansas roster, even though Self was kind of ready to move on. And he's just been shooting crazy from threes. Like, he's shooting 62% from three through his first few games. He was 8-for-8 in what was the game against Vermont, which is a record for Kansas. Like, the Kansas basketball program, he has the record for most threes without a miss, going 8-for-8. So I just look at the way they've been playing over the first three games, and I just look at every matchup against Marquette, and I hate it. I hate them all for Marquette.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's going to take a lot. I mean, Kansas is legit good. They've got talent up and down. They've got a deep roster. I mean, they're shooting, you know, 47% from three. Now, what, you know, maybe Vic, you know, regresses to the mean and goes 0-for-10 against us.
He's been out of his mind.
Right. Like, so that, you know, so maybe that one player not shooting 8-for-8 from three helps us somewhat, but like, there's nothing in any of the games, and I've watched Kansas in the Vermont and the Michigan State game. Turns out their game against Louisiana was not available. But anyway, you know, they're legit. Like, there was nothing like smoke and mirrors. They have an inside game. They have an outside game. And all this to say, like, there is nothing – I want to be as optimistic as possible because that's just who I am. But I just have this terrible feeling about this game because I just don't see where Marquette can make up the difference.
Going full Star Wars on me? You got a bad feeling about this?
I got a real bad feeling about this.
Yeah, so do I. And, you know, one other thing if you want to cling on to it, I mean, Marquette does have enough big guys to throw a lot of fouls at Udoka Azubuike, who is just an abysmal free throw shooter. He was awful last year. I mean, he's maybe a little better this year. By a little better, I mean he's 41%. So maybe you could throw him at the line. You could start hacking him if you want to try to slow the game down if it's getting away from you.
God, is that Matt Helt's music I hear?
Yeah, I mean, some minutes for Matt Helt. I guess I don't know if Eke is healthy enough to play.
No, he's not. He may be done.
Yeah, that's. I'm afraid that's probably true. But I mean, but still, even without him, with Helt and Morrow and both Hausers and Theo John, you've got a lot of fouls to use against Azubuike. And hey, if you need to get the walk-ons in to just run at him and hack him, that's what you got to do. If you got to slow the game down, and if you got to make it ugly to make it competitive, then that's what you got to do. But those are the only things I really cling on to for Marquette to have any hope against Kansas. Number one, they got to shoot crazy from 3-point, the fact that they've been so poor the first four games, you're kind of thinking maybe that game is coming where, like I said, a game where Marcus Howard shoots 8-plus or makes 8-plus and, you know, the Hausers start knocking some down and maybe you get close to 20 as a team. Like, that is one thing I'm clinging on to. Two, youth in the Kansas backcourt, maybe they make some mistakes that you can take advantage of, and then putting Azubuike at the free throw line. Other than that, I would have to say, like, it's, I like Kansas's matchup at every position. For that reason, I think Kansas runs away with it, and I would think Marquette loses this by 20 or more points.
Yeah, you know, I would consider at this point where my head's at kind of a success is a loss by less than 12 points, you know, including garbage time, right? Like, I don't want Marquette to be down 20 and narrow it to 11 with 2 seconds left or something stupid like that because they hit three threes.
Yeah, I'm just hoping to get through the game and nobody gets hurt so you can get up off the mat and play, assuming, Louisville the next day.
Right.
And then – or I guess that would be Friday because I don't think they're playing on Thanksgiving Day. So if you can, you know, go up against Louisville, who, you know, I mean, they're off to a decent start. They're number 55 in KenPom, and they're a decent squad, and their old buddy Chris Mack from Xavier's coaching there now. But I think that's a team that you could probably hang with. I mean, certainly they don't have the elite talent that they have had over the past few years, and I wouldn't say it's a total rebuilding year because I think Louisville might still be good enough to make the tournament. But I think that's a team you can hang with, and I think, you know, if you're coming off maybe a butt kicking against Kansas, that might be kind of a feeling of a, all right, let's finally right the ship. I wouldn't, season saving may be a little dramatic, but I think maybe a feeling that, all right, we could finally right the ship and get a nice win in the non-conference and kind of get this thing going. So, you know, assuming Tennessee beats Louisville, because, you know, Tennessee, I think, is a team that's could win the SEC, honestly. But if you get Louisville in the second game, that's my hope, is that you can beat that team on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? Because, I mean, we're running out of – we talked about it. We're running out of teams that we have to beat. You can't – going into the conference, and we're going to get to it here in a minute because it's worse than we thought. But going into conference play, I don't – I mean, at this point, four is the max number of, like, losses we could take. And, you know, and so you've got Kansas, probably Louisville. You've got Wisconsin. You've got Buffalo, who's very competitive, you know, upset West Virginia at home. You've got Kansas State. That's five high quality opponents. So at this point, you've got to win at least three out of those five.
That's kind of where I'm. That's kind of where I'm at, too. You know, it's tough to this early in the season to get a good grasp of, you know, exactly how many wins you need. But I feel like once we get to Big East play, I kind of have a good grasp on, like, how many wins in the Big East you're going to need to maybe be close to the tournament. But I'm kind of with you there. It's like, yeah, I know you're playing good teams, and we talked about this in our preseason pod, but if you're getting, like, upwards of five losses, you're going to go to the committee, you know, for the tournament, like, well, who'd you beat, right? You know, like, did you beat anybody? And I don't know if, like, only a win at home against Buffalo is going to be enough to impress the committee and, you know, say, oh, well, you did plenty of the non-conference then.
Right.
So yeah, you got to beat some of these teams and to have anything on your resume to make people say that you're a tournament team. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, out of those five games you mentioned, two in New York this week, Kansas State and Wisconsin at home, and then Buffalo, because I think Buffalo is a quality opponent. Like you mentioned, they beat West Virginia at home. I think you got to win three of those. And I would hate to lose both of these in New York to basically put yourself, well, you got to beat every name opponent you got left, right?
Right.
Because I think that then ratchets up the pressure a little bit. And, like, obviously you definitely don't want to lose at home to anybody. But to look at it, it's like, okay, well, our back's against the wall. We got nothing on our resume. We have to win them all. So that's why I kind of look at that Louisville game as a – Again, I think to say it would save the season is being a little overdramatic because there's so many games left. But I think it's a game that gives you some breathing room. Just makes you say, all right, well, we got one. We got a decent win that at least we can hang our hat on and say, all right, maybe we're going in a positive direction.
Yeah, well, and I think we have to be competitive in a game, right? Like, because I can find little, you know, Phil-type optimistic reasons for the season, but I just haven't seen anything in the Wojo era that makes it look easy or like look. It always feels like it's super hard in the Wojo era. There's never a talent disparity or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, no, I definitely know what you're saying. I feel like it kind of feels like it's such a slow build that you're not sure it's building at all.
Right. Right,
like it's like we're just kind of gonna wallow here in the middle in the Big East and hope everybody comes back to us and eventually we'll win the Big East that way, and you know, but like I don't feel like, yeah, I'm kind of with you to say, you know, they keep saying, well, we're building, we're getting there, we're gonna get players in, but you know, I kind of look at it as like what you've been building is here now, and this year and next year is about as good as it's going to get under Wojo. And if you don't take a big step forward this year and next year and become not just a tournament team, but a solid tournament team, a Big East contender, I look at the year after Sam Hauser and Marcus Howard are scheduled to graduate, like, you're taking a step back to the middle of the Big East after that, because I'm not sure you have a whole lot of impact players. I mean, you hope Joey Hauser's still on the roster at that time. But after that, I think you're going to lose so much, you're going to kind of be back where the team was last year, where you're a bubble team again. And I just don't know if we all have the patience for three more years of being a bubble team or worse. I think you want to be better than a bubble team this year and next year, and I think everyone's waiting for this team to show it. And we haven't seen it yet. And so I think that's what we're all just kind of get a little antsy for, is like, let's take an obvious push forward and say, all right, now this team's actually legit good, and we're just not seeing that just yet.
Yeah, well, the struggle is if we're saying that this team has talent to be a top 25 team, right? Like, and I don't see any evidence that says they're not that talented. It's not
sometimes
settled.
Sometimes yeah, sometimes no. Like, right. I love what I'm calling like the Triple H tandem of Howard, Hauser, and Hauser. But other than that, I think you got a lot of role players. And, you know, guys you like. I mean, that's not saying I want to get rid of anybody, but, you know, guys like Sakaar and Jamal Cain and Greg Elliott and Theo John. A lot of teams have guys like that.
How many teams have a Triple H plus competent role players, right?
Like, I mean, maybe a lot, but yeah.
You know, I'm saying that. The team is talented. I think there's no question. So that's where I struggle with if the team's talented, then what's left then to say it's a coaching problem, right?
Right. Like, you know, that's fair, because I look at the team, and I like the individual pieces. Like,
right.
Like I like Howard, Hauser, and Hauser. I think they're all very good players, guys who – probably pros at some level. And then, like, I like all the pieces for different reasons. Like, I like what John can bring in the middle, and I like, you know, Morrow's potential to be a rebounder, and I go on and on. There's a lot of things I like, but the sum of the parts I just don't like.
Right.
And so if you like all the individual pieces, but you don't like the end product, you got to point to something, and I guess the only place to point is to the coaching staff. And I'm not saying necessarily we got a clean house just yet, but if you're asking me which direction is that trending, I think we kind of see which direction it is trending. And if I were to ask you who's going to be the coach when the 2020-2021 season begins, I can't say definitively it's going to be Wojo.
Right. I totally agree. Now, again, I don't think we should overreact to, because the Indiana game could absolutely be another Vanderbilt, right? So we got to see what the season looks at. But again, it's trending in absolutely the wrong way right now.
Right, because there's nothing that we're all clinging on to saying, yeah, we're great, we're building. We are getting so close, and we are just right there. I don't think anybody sees anything that says, yep, we are just right on top of it. It's going to break through any day now, because I think to go to Indiana and just be that non-competitive, everyone's like, well, we're just kind of stuck in neutral. If they'd gone to Indiana, like you said, lost on a heartbreaker, fought tooth and nail, and just lost to what I think is a good Indiana team, even though they lost to Arkansas over the weekend, I think, that's all right. That's a hiccup that happens. But they were just so non-competitive. But that being said, this team does have a history of sucking me back in, you know, like Michael Corleone style. Just when I thought I'm out, they suck me back in, right? You know, they lose at home to Georgia, and they go out and beat Wisconsin by 19 points. Or, you know, they lose three out of four in conference play, and then they freaking beat Villanova at home or something like that.
So right.
This team has a way of sucking me back in, and that's why I would not encourage anybody to not watch the Kansas game. Just watch it, just in case something crazy happens, because you're going to want to say you watched it in case something does crazy happen, and this team does stun us and the college basketball world on Wednesday, but I wouldn't bet a dime on it. But like I said, this team does have a history of kind of keeping me just interested enough that I'm going to tune in every week with some excitement. So I'm hoping we do take that step forward in New York. I don't think it's going to come against Kansas, but maybe that can happen in the second game.
I mean, if Marquette's competitive against Kansas, what do you take away from that?
I would take that as a positive. Like, if they are within the KenPom margin of 9 points, if Bill Self is still, you know, playing his stars, trying to close out the game in the final minute because, you know, Marquette has been competitive and the game's not over, I would take that. Because, like I said, I think Kansas is a team that is going to be in the Final Four. They're that good. I mean, they're going to win the Big 12. Like, I would – whatever you want to bet, they're going to win. I think they are a runaway favorite to win the Big 12 again. And I think they're one of the best three or four teams in the country right now with, you know, the way Duke's playing. And I think Kentucky is still very good. I think they're just kind of getting up off the mat after what Duke did to them. But I still think Kentucky's going to be there when it's all said and done. But, yeah, Kansas is one of the elite teams in the country, and Marquette is not. But if they can be competitive with Kansas, I would say, all right, let's go in. All right, that sucks that we lost, but let's go into assuming Louisville on Friday and take that away. You know, I say that we haven't talked like a minute about Tennessee. That makes me think some way or another we're going to end up playing Tennessee.
Yeah, that seems right.
But, you know, like I said, I think Tennessee's so good, and I'd be very surprised if they lost to Louisville. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. That's where they're going to play the games.
Yep, exactly.
All right, before we get out of here, I do want to maybe just touch on the Big East as a whole, Phil, because it hasn't been good.
No. Our saviors currently are Georgetown and DePaul?
Yeah, it's St. John's. Hey, St. John's is undefeated right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the team that has basically carried the league for the past few years, Villanova, they have definitely come back to earth. And, you know, it's been said before. I actually listened to the Ion Sports podcast with Parrish and Norlander. Gary Parrish said it very well. When you lose four NBA players and you bring in a recruiting class that basically does nothing, because all those freshmen, I thought Javon Quinterly was going to be great. With Villanova, he may still be,
yep.
But he's doing nothing right now. Like, he's a bench warmer. And so if you lose four NBA players and you've got a freshman class who contributes, you know, very small minutes and very small contributions, you're going to be much worse than you were, if that's exactly what Villanova is. And so I have honestly no idea who's going to win the Big East this year. I mean, some people are still saying, yeah, Villanova can still probably do it, and maybe they will, but whew. Can't tell me that from what I saw from last week from Villanova.
No.
My big point I'm trying to make here is everybody pull for all of every Big East team during Feast Week. Whatever tournaments they're in, the Big East needs some quality wins because the way things are going right now, 10 or 11 wins in the Big East is not going to mean what it has meant in past years.
Well, The narrative is finally going to swing back the way – or, like, reality is going to swing back the way of the narrative most folks have about the Big East, just not – you know, it's thought of as not quite as good as the other conferences by a fair number of national writers, right? And this year –
I don't know. I think – don't you think Villanova winning two titles in 3 years has kind of shook that a little bit? And Xavier being as good as it was, even though it went out early in a couple of those runs with Chris Mack – like, I don't know, obviously every league has its haters, but I don't know, I think most smart basketball people, like the college basketball writers I follow, I think they have enough respect for the Big East. I don't think any of them, maybe most of them maybe favor the ACC or the Big Ten or Big 12, and depending what year it is, and I think a lot of times maybe I even side with them on some of those, but I think any college basketball national person who knows what he or she is talking about respects the Big East.
I think it's 50-50. I think there's definitely a narrative out there, and I'm not saying this like I think.
Who do you think shits on the Big East? Like who's maybe somebody that you think is just so down on the Big East?
Gary Parrish is always down on the Big East.
Is he?
Yeah, I feel like he is.
The only one I would grant you is Gottlieb.
Yeah, Gottlieb is way down on them.
Like,
but that's
like
not
Gottlieb
fair.
Will crap on the Big East at every opportunity, but like.
But that's,
I don't take it.
But
like,
that's
like, I think,
mostly
like,
Notre Dame.
Like, the guys I listen to, like I don't know if Parrish is down all that down on the Big East. He definitely, I mean, Norlander, I think, is big on the Big East. Goodman respects the Big East. Andy Katz does. You know, I think most people, they may talk about other leagues a little bit more, but I think what games are on their networks or whatnot. But yeah, I think there's enough respect for the Big East out there. Maybe that's just me putting the blinders on, but I think there's enough respect.
Yeah, I just and maybe I'm reacting too, but I remember a number of stories the last couple of years where it was, oh look, the Big East is 20-2 in non-conference games, or you know 25-1 or whatever, and everyone's and stories about who knew the Big East was this good, da 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 da. You know what I mean? And again, maybe it's me being overly sensitive. I just generally get the impression that the Big East is a step behind.
Maybe there are some people here and there, but
yeah.
I think Villanova winning two titles in 3 years, and then
you would hope
both, and like Xavier and Villanova both getting one seeds. I think there's enough respect now, but I think one thing that has been I don't know if it's even a narrative, but it may be more of a truth. Somebody other than Villanova needs to be great.
Yep.
Like, Xavier was right there, and I hate that Xavier... I thought Xavier had two teams that should have gone to the Final Four, and they both went out in the first weekend, and that sucked. But somebody else does need to make a big step forward. Now, I think Marquette, honestly, should be one of those teams,
right?
Quite frankly.
Well, and this is the year that somebody's going to have to, it looks like, right? I mean...
Yeah, I think so. And, like, I think Villanova may rebound, and maybe Jay Wright may get something out of those freshmen eventually, but right now he's getting nothing.
Right.
And I don't think it's his fault either. Those guys are just too young, and I think they're just not ready for this stage. But we'll see if anybody – I'm hoping some of these teams can – I saw Xavier lost in the Maui Invitational earlier on Monday. I'm trying to keep up with some of the – I saw St. John's won, so that, I mean,
yep.
That's something.
Well, I think in the Gavitt games, the Big East went 2-8, I want to say, or 2-11, or 2-9.
Yeah, well, I think there's only eight Gavitt games, and I think...
Oh, there's only... yeah, you're right. I went the wrong way.
Big Ten got five, because I think Georgetown won.
DePaul won.
I don't know. DePaul won. And DeProvidence, were they the other? Because I think, like, eight teams participated.
Yeah.
They lost to Michigan, so maybe not. So I'm not going to look it up. But, yeah, I think it was 5-3, I'm pretty sure, in the Gavitt games, Big Ten won. But, yeah. Back to my point, though, pull for your favorite Big East teams, and that by favorite, I mean all of them. Pull for every Big East team in every holiday tournament, because I think the conference needs a little RPI boost, because once you get to the conference play, once you get to January, the conference RPI really, or net, or whatever we're going with this year, isn't going to move that much, because everybody's playing each other. So, hoping for... Now, as I say that, I just remember Villanova plays Kansas this year. Oh, man, that's going to be bad.
Yeah, it's going to be real bad.
So, well,
hopefully we won't be the worst scoring differential in major conference games that Kansas plays in.
Yeah. I'm not concerned for the long term for the Big East, though. I think a lot of teams are young, and a lot of teams, the Big East lost a lot of talent from last year, and it'll come back around. This is just going to be a year where it's just not going to be great. Hopefully
right.
We can see, I'd love to see four or five teams in the tournament. I think five might be a struggle the way things are going right now. I just hope it's not something really sad like two or three, because that might be a little rough. But
yeah,
we'll see how it goes. But before we get out of here, Phil, you want to just make official predictions on New York this week?
I think Marquette loses by 22 to Kansas, and then I think they're going to get a squeaker against Louisville.
I'm with you. I'm basically kind of sticking by our preseason predictions. As bad as it was against Indiana, it's still right on track with season prediction with total for me. and you was, I guess you had him beating.
I had him beating Indiana.
The point is, my preseason win loss prediction had Marquette comfortably in the tournament, so we're still on track, hopefully.
But I'm so you're telling me there's a chance.
There is. There's always a chance. So I am going to stick basically exactly what you said. I'm going blowout against Kansas. I think. Yeah, it'll be bad. 25 plus. But I'm going to say they rebound and scratch out a win against Louisville, and we'll have something positive to talk about next week. So I'll say maybe a close win, 75-73 over Louisville on Friday. So that's my prediction.
That seems right.
All right, let's do it. As always, we welcome your feedback. We appreciate you checking in here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F. 23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks, the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. It's where we post the podcast. Leave your comments there. You can also rate us, review us on Apple Podcasts. Please do that. Be sure to subscribe as well. And we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. If that's your thing, we post the podcast there as well. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up, Phil?
Definitely watch the Kansas game. Just make sure you have enough of your favorite adult beverage available.
Yeah, just whatever you need to dull the senses, whatever your poison is, make sure you have it. Maybe also have a backup plan, maybe time to put the tree up or, watch a movie or something. Just have a backup plan, but definitely tune in just to see how it goes, just in case something crazy happens.
Exactly.
All right, until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody. Yeah, boy, he's been –